So glad that. Yeah. Listen, I'm really grateful that you are standing up so late because I think it's in India 10 o'clock, isn't it?
11.
11. Oh, thank you that you stay with
Perfect.
us. Arundhata Chennoy ist außerordentliche Professorin an der Jindal School of International Affairs der Jindal Global University in Narayana, Indien. Nach vielen Jahren als engagierte Wissenschaftlerin, Professorin, Dekanin der School of International Studies der Jawaharlal Nehru Universität in Neu-Delhi ist sie in Ruhestand gegangen und umso aktiver in der Asian Europe People's Forum unter anderem und im International Peace Bureau, Internationalen Friedensbüro. Thank you so much that you're with us. Der
Thank you.
zweite Referierende ist Jochen Scholz. Er ist Publizist und Friedensaktivist, Oberstleutnant der Luftwaffe AD. Er hat in NATO-Stäben in Dänemark und Ramstein gearbeitet als Referent des Bundesministeriums der Verteidigung. Er hat an der von Al Gore inspirierten Studie Umwelt und Sicherheit im internationalen Kontext mitgearbeitet. Nach seiner Pensionierung war er Mitarbeiter der Bundestagsfraktion der PDS und der Linken. Und er ist einer der aufrührerischen Mitdenker im Gesprächskreis Frieden der Rosa-Luxemburg-Stiftung. Rainer Braun, der dritte Referierende. Er ist auch, das ist immer ein schöner Titel, Publizist und Aktivist. Rainer hat in den 80er Jahren am Krefelder Appell bereits mitgearbeitet. Er bringt reiche Erfahrung in der Leitung internationaler Organisationen rund um Wissenschaft und Politik ein, unter anderem in der IALANA, den Juristen gegen Atomwaffen, in der NADWIS-Initiative für Frieden und Zukunftsfähigkeit. Er war Co-Präsident des Internationalen Peace Bureau und er ist einer dieser nimmermüden Lebens- und aktionserfahrenen Analytiker, Inspiratoren und Organisatoren. An euch drei einen herzlichen Dank, dass ihr euch heute Abend Zeit genommen habt, mit uns zu diskutieren. Und ich gebe als erstes das Wort zu Anuradha Chennoy. Anuradha, you have the floor.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, dear friends in IPB and other organizations. As always, I'm delighted to be here. Since this is going to be in German, I am going to show a PowerPoint so it's easier. And second, of course, I always speak from the point of view of the Global South. And while I have, for so many years been in and out of the US and Europe, suddenly now, for the last 2 years, I feel that there is a widening gap between the Global South and the West, which we didn't feel as much earlier. So in any case, I've been asked to speak on what is global NATO and global the expansion. So I think, of course, all of you know that NATO was constructed after in defense, it's a defensive alliance of the Cold War. But its Article 6 limits the alliance to Europe and North America. But recent, it has been global even earlier, especially after it intervened in Libya and sent peacekeepers to Afghanistan, taking over the ISAF security forces in Iraq. So it's not that it was restricted to just the Euro-Atlantic. But recently, if you see the NATO strategic concept of 2022, that is very clear indication of going global. Number one, this concept says that the expansion is a great success. that NATO will maintain presence on land, sea, and space. It doesn't specify borders. And it says investing in NATO is the best way to ensure the endurance between European and the NATO, North American allies. So what I'm arguing is that there is a greater, there's a new phase of European integration. First, Europe integrated with itself as we see it, but now Europe is integrating much more closely with the US than ever before. And you can see that if you compare the NATO strategic concept with American national security doctrines of the last few years. This particular concept of 2022 echoes US foreign policy and US national interests. It doesn't echo, as far as I could see, European interests. So for us, what we can see is a great convergence of the transatlantic elite. So it talks continuously about the Euro-Atlantic interests. The threats in the American national security documents, which I have quoted here, whether it's Biden's speeches, I've gone through all of them. And they're very similar. The threats are the same. The threats are Russia, the terrorists and instability in Africa and the Middle East, China, which is a challenge, it says, to all of NATO. And then, of course, there are some human security issues like climate and terrorism. So basically, what this document is saying is that the whole world is a threat. If you have Russia, China, Africa, Middle East, these are all instabilities here. And you have terrorism, which is everywhere. There's terrorism in South Asia, in Southeast Asia. So everywhere is a threat except for the Euro-Atlantic Alliance. And that threat is exaggerated greatly, in my view. Of course, there is the strategic method of defense and deterrence and prevention and management of conflict, which is good, but we don't see that. We don't see defense and deterrence. What we are seeing is actually an intertwining with local conflicts everywhere and making you part of that conflict. Just like the Ukraine-Russia conflict was a civil war in that region, but NATO's got totally intertwined because they see it as a threat. The threats in the Middle East, I mean, like in the support to Israel of NATO has come is a shock to us in the rest of the world who always valued what the Europeans said about themselves, that they are defenders of human rights. That they are defenders of values. So when you're supporting what we see and what the ICJ has said is a plausible genocide, it comes as a shock at what's happened to European values. Then the intertwining with Taiwan, the conflict. I mean, there would not be that much of a conflict between China and Taiwan or in the South China Sea. It could diffuse on its own, but with the US coming in and looking for a Ukraine of the East, a new Ukraine. After all, Ukraine took 20 years to develop, 2014, and the refusal of to make engage in talks, and Merkel saying we planned it, and Minsk too was just a fraud. It was just getting time, and Borrell saying this is the garden, and everyone else are savages. So all this is a new discourse, which the rest of the world, I mean, after we know we came to terms with colonialism, post-colonialism, neocolonialism, and the South started developing. But now there is a belief that there is a recolonization. And you can see that step by step in, let's say, in the Philippines, especially, four new bases, all kinds of ties, and I'll go into that. So anyway, so my first point is clear that there is this great convergence that, as we can see, maybe in Europe you can't. So how does this global NATO actually, what is its method? It's with bases, military exercises, coordinated policies with member countries, for example, the CIS MOA, that is Communications and Interoperability and Security Memorandum Agreements. They have this with the Philippines, they have it with India. And just today, the American Deputy Defense Secretary said that, well, the Indian Navy is better than the American Navy in the Indian Ocean and Asia Pacific, meaning that we need to intertwine with them for this Chinese threat and containment. They know very clearly there is this conflict between India and China, but we've had 21 rounds of India-China talks. So we don't need NATO to get intertwined in this conflict. This really is where the US presence is, and I think this US presence is going to mean NATO presence. Now, in the Indo-Pacific, in Asia-Pacific, however you want to call it, the major non-NATO allies, of course, are already there: Australia, New Zealand, Japan, South Korea. But there is this communication, interoperability, and security memorandum of agreements with Japan, South Korea, Australia, New Zealand, Philippines, and India, where all these countries offer at different levels, some more than the others. For example, India just allows US ships to come into the ports to recharge, nothing more than that. They don't have a US base and they can't get into the towns. Then there are the logistic exchange memorandum agreements. So all very, names which hide what the real agreement is about. Then there is the US-Pakistan Mutual Defense Assistance Agreement, which is renewed just 2 months ago, where there's exchange of classified communication and enhanced cooperation. And you know that Pakistan is in extremely severe economic crisis. They wanted to get cheap oil from the Russians, but there was a regime change thanks to the Americans. Their former prime minister is in jail, again, thanks to the military and US military. And they want Pakistan to kind of break relations with China. So this is how global NATO is actually acting. Then there are these very specific agreements like Quad, which the Australian peace movement has really opposed, seeking to curtail Chinese influence. The Quad is with US, Australia, India, and Singapore. It's quasi-militarist. It's not as militarist because India has resisted that. They don't want to be in any direct confrontation with the Chinese. They only want to put some amount of pressure on the Chinese so that our border issues are resolved through peacefully. Then there is the US-Japan Republic of Korea trilateral ties. There's a US Philippines agreement on four new military bases and the security pact with the Solomon Islands. So you can imagine how many military agreements there are now in the Asia Pacific region, in the Indo-Pacific. And therefore, what happened is that the nuclear non-proliferation treaties of Australia, etc., are at risk. What does this do then, really? So this is the map of US military presence in the Asia Pacific. You can see the bases here, with which NATO is also engaged in all these areas, in around ASEAN, around China, around the eastern part of Russia. So how do you think other parts are going to, and also then there is this NATO liaison office with Africa. The NATO and US works, NATO works with US CENTCOM and with AFRICOM. 15 NATO countries have military bases in Africa. And there's also Russian presence. So Africa also is getting very heavily militarized. So now I'm just going towards the end, and I'm showing what are the types of reactions to NATO expansion. One, there is counter-militarization from China and Russia and their strategic partnership. They don't want to be contained. I mean, they are seen as a threat, and they see Europe and the Euro-Atlantic as a threat. So this counter-threat escalation continues, and there is militarization and threat, etc. Then there's bandwagoning with Japan, South Korea, Philippines, who want to bandwagon with the US and with NATO. And that is why these new bases. The third, which is coming from the global south, is very important. And that is our policies of non-alignment, which are reviving very strongly again. And that is that they do not want to be part of this growing conflict or growing Cold War between the West and Russia and China. And therefore, there are a lot of these mini-lateral groupings now. BRICS, ASEAN, SCO, these are not security, they are not military, but they are trade groupings and the strategic groupings. So these are the state actions. Then there are the non-state actors and their reactions to NATO and the US and this interventions in wars. And this non-state actors is what you're seeing now in the Middle East with the Houthis, with the Iraqi and Syrian militia, which are not part of the state, but attacked US bases almost 100 times. And this would happen even in the rest of Asia if this NATO expansion continues. The non-state actors, you can call them militia, terrorists, resistance, anything, but they have power and new kinds of technologies. And the last reaction is from the peace movements, which is small, who are saying no to NATO. So what my last slide actually shows that we have two types of security, which I think this audience already knows. One is NATO's so-called cooperative security, and what we support as common security. And these are our differences. For NATO, it's security only for the Euro-Atlantic, meaning exclusive security. Whereas for common security, it is security for all, security from want, freedoms from fear, etc. For NATO, it's security against anyone who is the other, who is different. So they have Russophobia, Sinophobia, Islamophobia, and any other phobia, the other's phobia. Whereas for common security, it's confidence building and trust. For NATO, it's escalatory deterrence. Nuclear, hybrid, expansionism, increasing defense expenditure. You saw what Trump said, that, increase it to 2% or forget about it. We're not going to come out and support. So holding Europe captive. Whereas for common security, there can be no security without international disarmament, limitations on conventional weapons, reduction of military expenditure. Then for their military alliances is NATO and its spokes, whereas here it's regional and global cooperation. And lastly, NATO doctrine has this with us or against us, force, threat, regime change, sanctions, interventions, hybrid war, looking for new proxies, whereas for common security, there's better regulation, international law, addressing grievances, etc. And if you see what much of the global South is saying, despite all the contradictions and autocratic regimes in their foreign policy, they're actually saying a lot of what common security is saying. So that is why, friends, along with you, I say that NATO does not make us safer. It makes us poorer and more insecure. So no to NATO. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much, Anu, for your very interesting and brief and concentrated speech and overview you gave us. I have to say some words in German and then I will continue in English. Einige sind neu dazugekommen. Können alle Teilnehmer jetzt uns verstehen? Könnt ihr